Hello, this is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Bob McKee, SVP Americas at Fortude. Bob, hi.
Hi, Steve.
Bob, you've worked with several fashion brands on technology change over your career. Does it get any easier for them?
Never. It's gotten easier for me over the years, but it's always change is difficult, and organizations do tend to get caught up in the way we've always done things.
Is there anything specific to fashion at all?
There's an awful lot that comes from need, immediate need at a point in time. We've just taken on a different brand. We've just become an organization that handles a new product line that we've acquired from somewhere. Everybody has to become creative. Everybody has to figure out how to assimilate that into the business. But then that assimilation doesn't necessarily fit with the ways or the standards or the processes and policies and procedures that the organization has in place. So that always then requires some new amount of change management.
One of the things we see in retail in a broader sense is that technology is also changing so much faster than it has done before.
Technology is changing, and the sad thing is that the retail side of the continuum that is fashion is actually changing at a slower pace than all the rest of the value chain. There's a lot of stuff available, and not an awful lot of it is yet in play.
Because of budgets and profits?
Because of budgets and profits and inheritance and desire to do things the way you want. A lot of retail organizations think that their core competence or their differentiation comes from the way they do certain things. And that can often be a bit of their own undoing. When you have to run a bit faster, but you don't think you have to, you're always going to lose that race.
So how should they think?
Forward. Look at the people who are most successful. Look at the organizations that are actually turning in the numbers you're looking to turn in. In the fashion industry, certainly you have a lot of typical old companies that really don't feel like changing. But then you take somebody like Inditex that brought Zara to the world. And in a very short period of time, they sort of captured this huge market share. They didn't have a negative quarter forever when everybody else was turning down. They're an organization that actually comes from the textile world. Inditex is a Spanish textile maker. And as they were growing up, they were very popular and very successful in Spain. And people said, nah, can't grow beyond that. And then they went beyond that. No, they can never possibly grow beyond Europe. Well, nope, they did that too. Then they grew into Asia. Nah, they'll never be able to come into the U.S. And now they're dominant in the U.S. too. So that's probably the best example of what I'm talking about that exists. Under Armour would be another. Guy used to sew them in his basement, and now it's a brand everybody's looking to copy.
And you talk about looking forward. Are there trends that you're seeing in the industry that people should be aware of?
Well, there are loads of trends when it comes to the supply chain side. Organizations are beginning to understand that it's likely that smaller batches, more frequent shipments, moving quicker than just trying to find cheaper and cheaper places actually makes more sense. Near sourcing actually is making more sense than just cheap sourcing. Though a lot of it has to do with where you stratify yourself in the retail world. There are organizations, I'm not going to name them, that are very much in what we would call cheap and deep products. Lots of it, very disposable fashion, sell a bunch of it, move on to the next one. Then you have other organizations that are much more into investment products, much more sustainable. They're into products that are not going to go into a landfill. You see an awful lot, and it all has to do with lining up your value chain, your supply chain, your logistics chain, and your demand and supply chain that makes it all happen.
Going back to your Zara example, I think they have a 3-week turnover for new fashion lines.
And the really crazy thing is that they talk to each other. At the core of making it all work is super good communication. Some of it is database, some of it is augmented by computerization, IT. A lot of it is simple things like talking to each other, working together, and certainly documenting everything they do. Everybody has a trail that they follow.
And when you're talking about talk communication, you're talking about the retail shop floor to the manufacturing shop floor to the designers, aren't you?
Exactly. We're selling incredibly well on this particular product. We're selling this. This color is carrying out. Doesn't matter what you put the color in. You could sell anything in this color. It is one of those things that those who are closest to the consumer are getting a voice to feedback all the way back to the people who are the inspiration people, the design type people. It's the left brain talking to the right brain.
We're here at Inforum this week, and Fortitude are launching a new product called Fashion Retail in a Box. We've talked about fashion retail, and you've mentioned some aspects of it, but what is fashion retail?
Fashion retail is the sale of products that fall into that set that we refer to as fashion. Fashion is based on a hierarchy of styles, families, categories that fall into, could be menswear, could be womenswear, could be children's wear, it could be tops, it could be bottoms, it could be footwear. Those things, for the most part, that, for want of a better analogy, the peacock in us all.
But not every organization that is in that sector is the same, are they? Some do more than others.
As I was saying before, you have a lot of differentiation that comes in the type of marketplace that they're in. Are they cheap and deep? Are they investment? Are they somewhere in between? I've worked in my career in the fashion industry for all of those different varieties, from very expensive men's investment clothing to women's and children's throwaway. In that, they're all in the fashion industry, but the commonality is, first of all, it's based on consumer demand. It's the second largest segment of the consumer goods industry. Food is first, fashion is second. You buy the one because you have to, you buy the other because you want to. Though if you eat too much of the first one, you're always going to be buying more of the second one because you need larger sizes.
But does retail in a box suit every organization?
In theory, yes, it can. But our focus is really on small to mid-size organizations that we think are kind of underserved by retail at this point in time from a solution perspective. Most organizations in the software solutions area do tend to focus on the really large guys with the really large names, deeper pockets, and so on. We saw an opportunity with organizations that were a bit smaller than that, that fall below the usual threshold.
One of the issues around small to mid-size organizations on that terminology is that can mean a very different thing in the UK to China to the US. So can you try and quantify what kind of size organization? You're not talking mom and pop shops in the US who just sell buying clothes from a distributor and sell them on the shop, are you?
Yes, it could. It could easily include them. The idea was that we would build something that would be able to scale from three shops to perhaps a couple hundred shops. It's difficult to try to quantify where we think the threshold really is, because we're building this on the back of M3, and M3 is nearly infinitely scalable. So from an M3 perspective, we could be looking at, yes, for you as an organization, we can scale up to thousands if you need. One of the things that differentiates the fashion industry, you were asking that a moment ago, most fashion organizations, most organizations that get into the fashion industry, like lots of others, intend to grow. They start small and they grow. One of the things that happens to fashion companies is they buy software that doesn't scale because that's what's available for them. Frankly, with fashion retail in a box, we're looking at an opportunity where we can take them from having to buy a shrink wrap software, which is going to be good for their first 10 shops or till they get to a certain plateau level, and they fall over because then they can't grow any bigger or they have to go out and spend a lot more money for software and support. This is designed to grow as they grow.
One of the things you said about M4 M3, it's now on the cloud, but it's traditionally been seen as one of the larger ERP solutions, and that means expensive implementation times and big projects. So how does Fashion Retail in a Box change that?
It's built around our implementation accelerator model, and we've carried it on. Essentially, a big part of what Fashion Retail in a Box is a continuation of the implementation accelerator to flesh out more of the requirements for that small to medium-sized retail organization.
You talked about M3, and it has some other components I think you can add into it, because not everyone's going to want everything.
As an organization continues to grow, you'll be able to add in other elements. Certainly things like PLM, which of course is a hugely important item to most fashion companies. Equally beyond that, you could be looking at things like InfoNexus, which is all about logistics. It's all about supply chain. It's all about the network of finding where's my product, which one of the Nexus partners has it, and where does it move? Does the logistics company have it yet? Because again, in the industry, a lot of time has been spent talking about speed to market. But in fact, the reality is the important measurement is speed to consumer. Getting it to market is only part of the goal. The goal is to match supplies and demands. Once a consumer has it and the consumer says, yeah, I love it, that's when your job is where it needs to be. Yes, all those various components, demand chain, demand management, product development, product conception, concept to product, those are all things that can be added in that are existing in for products.
So is accelerator the right word? Because it sounds like you're not just talking about something that firms use when they implement, you're also talking a bit more about in life as well, potentially.
Implementation accelerator is a term that we created when I was with Infor, actually. The idea behind it is to create as much of a pre-configured solution as you can possibly create, because no matter how much you may try to pre-configure things, there's still going to be some nuance that makes this organization, and you do have to have those things still available to be configured. Hopefully it's one of those things that we can still be able to deliver. Our goal is to be able to create a 4-month delivery package.
Do you have different templates for different types of retailers existing within the accelerator?
At this point in time, it's generic, but we've really focused in on certain things. The initial focus will be fashion, but with a bit of a footwear edge to it.
And where does e-commerce fit in this? Because we talk about traditional routes to market in terms of distribution and getting into the shops and getting to the customer, but everything's being disintermediated at the moment.
E-commerce. You use a word like disintermediated, and then you use e-commerce. Nice big word, and then an ancient word. E-commerce is so yesterday. E-commerce gave way to multi-channel, which gave way to omni-channel. Right now, this is being designed for an omni-channel world. Again, I want to go back to you've got supply and you've got demand, and the objective of retail, objective of the entire value chain, is to connect somebody who has a demand with somebody who has the supply. And that lends itself perfectly to omni-channel, which is not about just either bricks or clicks. It's about bricks and clicks and everything else. It literally everything, from being able to buy things from your mobile phone to your tablet to being able to click your teeth together and send a message to a satellite that creates demand. Interactive television for shopping, it's got to be the next step. Right now, how many shopping channels exist? And yet you still have to pick up your phone, or for those 7 people left in the world that still have a landline, you can call from your landline or you can call from your mobile. What's it going to be? It's got to happen. My television is touchscreen at home, for crying out loud. There's no reason in the world why I shouldn't be able to just buy it from that. It's got to happen. Days away, I'm sure.
That seems a bit futuristic.
From my perspective, omnichannel, the sky's the limit. We haven't even begun to imagine the ways that we're going to be able to do things with omnichannel. I assume at some point in time you've seen what came out a few years ago, Google Glass. I'm sure that you blink your eyes twice, you'll be able to order 3 dozen t-shirts delivered to your home by noon. But the tech still lives on, and the tech is still behind a lot of other things that we see. We can't look at any of these things that happen as failures. They're just steps in the process of bringing forward some new bits of technology. If you had a chance to see it, it's like, wow, this is cool. We had one of our real inventive people at Infor who had the Google Glasses, and we actually were running M3 through the Google Glass.
What are the challenges currently faced by the fashion industry?
From a macro perspective, they're all over the place. First of all, things like logistics. Logistics are hugely important. The implementation of tariff systems where nobody had planned one, or the divestiture of a single country away from a large union like the European Union, or organizations that are now looking at building borders where there weren't borders before. But beyond that, you've got issues of sustainability. You've got issues of climate change. You've got issues of how does the industry impact the world. The industry is always looking at all kinds of different regulatory, not even regulatory, but social compliance issues. Regulatory is hugely important. A regulation can be changed in one country, but not another. For down-filled outerwear. The U.S. has laws relative to the origin of the down. It can never come from a live plucked animal. Yet, there are countries in the world that sell down, and it does come from live plucked animals. So you have to have that connectivity through the value chain to say, what was my source? What was my point of origin?
That traceability is what often built into the technology solutions that we have today and regulatory frameworks, and they apply that.
Yeah, and that's why Infor has something like Infor Nexus, which is a network.
How do you deal with the ethical side of this? Because the ethical side is a bit more amorphous.
It is, and that does come back to the whole issue of social management. Not only do you have organizations that are unethical enough to make things in a certain way, you have consumers that, because of a price, are unethical enough to buy it. How do you control that? That one I really can't answer. Make it ever more difficult for it to actually come into the marketplace.
Omnichannel is quite a nice, neat, simple word. It's not actually that easy to deliver, is it?
No. Is anything as easy as it sounds? No, not really. Again, when you look at all the potential permutations that exist in an omni-anything world, it will be difficult. But again, if you attempt to reduce it down to what the goal is of supplies and demands, connecting supplies, and truly all that omni-engine is creating demand. And you have to be able to capture them through some means. And those means will avail themselves, whether it's Google Glass or it's my mobile phone or it's through the television. Capturing that demand is going to be captured.
If you're a fashion retail organization listening to this, what are the first steps they should think about when they're looking at how to modernize their organization?
This is going to be an unpopular thing for retailers to hear. Get moving. Start running as fast as you can and stop overthinking what your next move is going to be. Inventory is inventory. Separating your inventory into buckets, this can only be sold and shipped here, this can only be sold and shipped there, is really kind of ancient thought processes. Usually those barriers existed because you wanted to know, on a KPI or a metrics perspective, how well did my West retail buyer versus my South retail buyer do? Well, when the real objective is just to sell merchandise and to connect demand and supply, then you really shouldn't care about that metric. That's an inside noise issue. I was shopping not all that long ago. There's a product, a brand that I like. It's called Burma Bebus. And I went into Nordstrom's in the U.S., in Chicago. And I said, do you have any more of those Burma Bebus V-necks? And he said, well, no, I don't think. I think we're all sold out of them. But let me check. I think there may be some still left on .com. And he called it up and he said, well, yeah, and actually they're 20% off. Now, I bought them and they shipped them to me. But to me, it's like, this is somewhat insane. You don't have them in the stores, and I was prepared to pay full price. But you do have them in .com, and I got that for 20% off. Now, thank goodness that your clerical help was bright enough to say, oh, but I might be able to find it through this other channel. Separation of channels is foolish.
So what you're talking about is a retailer should be able to understand where the demand is and move the product to be able to service the customer at the point of demand.
Yeah, and to put it in a very simple way, they have to be better at reading the tea leaves.
And that's a good segue in terms of what does the future hold for retail? Because the big thing is everyone's scared of Amazon.
And they should be. I'm scared of Amazon. I don't know where Amazon should be scared of Amazon. But realistically, maybe Amazon should be scared of Taobao, Alibaba. Again, you take a look at the globe, not just the Western world, but globally. What is it? Alibaba is 10 times the size of Amazon. Taobao, which is really the real competitor, is 3 times bigger than Amazon. I guess I'd have to leave it with, if you've got more money than God, then I guess we should be concerned.
Bob, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.